right, on this episode of Writing Fiction, Regina and I are going to discuss why I believe, we'll see if Regina feels the same way, that social media is dead or at least needs to be changed. And I have a lot of opinions on this. Before we get started, let's talk. First of all, if you've never heard this show before and you're new to our show, Regina, why don't you give a little brief introduction to yourself?
Oh, okay. My name's Regina St. Clair. I write under the name R. St. Clair, like just the letter R. And I write horror, mostly some young adult paranormal romance. And my most recent book is a horror carnival horror called Carney. So you can find that on Amazon. And I also have some books on draft to digital, which I usually don't advertise too much, but they're out there.
All right.
And I have a YouTube channel called Regina's Haunted Library, where I discuss mostly horror books and movies.
Yeah, which you just did the Omen one.
I just did one on the Omen, and I haven't recorded it yet, but this week, if all goes as planned, I'll be doing a video for the Omen 2, Damien Omen 2, which is an excellent movie. Almost as good as the first one, in my opinion.
I like your YouTube thumbnail. It's very creepy with you, like, superimposed Damien's face on you.
Yeah, I was wondering if you would notice that.
I saw that. Well, I didn't think you looked like that.
No, at least not on most days.
So my name is James, and my writing name is James DeFeo, but most people know me as Dr. J, the retired demon hunter and knower of things. I am on YouTube, The Office of Demonology, and these links are in the show notes. And Regina and I put together a zine, a horror zine called Bookworm's Horror Zine, and you can find that in the show notes if you want to pick up a copy of, I think we have issue 2, issue 4, and 5 will be coming out in May. I also have a newsletter website, and that is in the show notes, and I'll discuss that a little bit later, because it kind of is why I'm doing this, is based on what this topic is about with social media. And okay, if you want, even though I'm not really using Instagram or Facebook at this point, you can find us on at Bookworms Horror Zine on Instagram. Also, if you listen to this podcast on YouTube, you can do the comments right there. And also, if you go to my newsletter website, the podcast is there, and you can comment there as well.
Yes. For the fact that we both have sort of pulled back from social media, we still have a lot of connections to the internet to explore. You know, I mean, we both have blogs, although I don't update mine as much as you do. And we certainly have email addresses. I have several.
Yeah, I have a lot too. But email's a little different.
A YouTube channel. Which is my preferred way of communicating as far as like the stuff that I have out there. I also have a Wattpad page that I'm active on and things like that. But I gave up Facebook for this past Lent and just decided at the end of 40 days that I didn't miss it. And not only did I not miss it, but I felt better without it.
Yes.
So I put in the full deletion. Now, if you've ever tried either deleting or deactivating. This is the second time I've done this with Facebook. The first time I did it was years ago with I do it through my pen name, my real name. And then I decided to delete it. And Facebook makes it very difficult to do that. Have you ever tried?
Yes. Yeah, it's not easy.
That alone makes me, strengthens my resolve to quit, because I feel very manipulated by that platform on many levels. And I know I'm not alone, and I'm just like, you know, the heck with this. I don't like this. I'm out.
And so I thought
I feel free.
Yeah. And so this is kind of why I'm bringing this up for writing fiction. It's not just that, it's for creators. And what I'd like to do is first go back to when that's the time period, which before 2010, there was this techno optimism.
Mm-hmm.
And I was part of that. And I know you were too.
Yeah.
And there was a reason why, when the internet came along, and as a creator, it opened up this entire world for you. Now, not in the beginning, because in the internet in the very beginning was you just going on and reading stuff.
Sure.
and, you know, might have been a blog eventually, but once they call it Web 2.0 came up.
Because I remember the first time I really got involved was probably 2005, where I created I took an HTML class and created a very basic website, or maybe it was 2004. And, you know, it seemed like, wow, this is really creative and fun. And then it just quickly became weird.
Well, we'll talk about why it became weird. But in the beginning, I remember YouTube just thinking, wow, I can actually create something and other people can see it around the world. And people liked you and they would click on subscribe and then you would see their work, you know,
right.
or they would see your work. And that's how it went for just a little bit, where you could do stuff and get a following, if you want to call it that. And and that was good. There was a lot of people being discovered, a lot of creators being discovered. And it was this wonderful time. And
it does seem like another time.
Yeah. I mean, another time, you know?
Gemini Rising was another time. And the fact that we won a Webby honoree for that project, which, I mean, who's winning at Webby's now? They're probably like TED Talks and stuff. I mean,
exactly. Yeah. Like,
I haven't followed it, but bigger, much bigger projects and very corporate, I would imagine.
Well, this happened with podcasting too. So when you were doing Gemini Rising, I was doing This Is Some Scene, which was a podcast.
Right.
And that's how
you
met.
You were one of the first people to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. And no one was doing it who had a name. Now every freaking celebrity has a podcast.
Right.
I'm talking, what was that, 2006, maybe 2005?
Yeah.
Like, that's where I was doing that podcast. And
well, that's around the time we met.
Yeah. Because I got you on because of Gemini Rising.
Right. Right.
I really liked what you were doing. I was like, come on the show, we'll talk about it. And
but that felt, even at that time, and, you know, you and I made that connection, and I made a lot of connections through that project. And we should put that project in the show notes too.
Okay.
If anyone's interested. But we also had like real, and maybe this is something we can talk about today. We didn't just communicate online. Of course, we were all in the same, you know, location. We lived close by. But we would meet up in real life and have screenings in my living room and talk and develop projects. Like, there was a real sense that this was a creative renaissance.
Yes.
And I was thrilled to be part of it.
Yeah. And that's what I want to end with today, because I think that's what we need to get back to. But that was a great time for creators, whether you were a writer, a film person, or an artist or musician. You were able to build a following and you could turn that into something. Now, where it gets weird, oh, by the way, this is me being funny and sort of not at the same time.
Okay.
You remember 2012?
Yes.
So 2012, everybody thought the world was going to end.
Well, I didn't, but yeah.
Right. But it was because of a Mayan prophecy. They believed 2012 was going to be the end of the world. I think that what 2012 was really saying, and this is actually what the Mayan said, it wasn't about the end of the world. It was going to be a time where the world changes drastically, or something different is going to be a new order or something. What we're going to discover—
Because those predictions and those prophecies are never literal.
Right.
They're always metaphors, and you have to look at them that way. So in that way, that's probably— What happened?
Well, I will say I don't buy any of it, like predictions and stuff like that. But what I will say, if I thought the Mayans had the foresight and understanding of what the world would be like in 2012,
you're the Scully and I'm the Mulder.
Yeah, I am Scully. I would say that when we talk about this, all the data that we're talking about where things go downhill is pretty much 2012. Every chart starts 2012. And then you'll say, why is that? So, you know, listening to, there's these very, very smart tech people who used to work in the tech industry who talks about children. And you and I, Regina, grew up in a play-based childhood.
Right.
And this is where we went out and played. We rode bikes. We
free range.
Yeah. And that was pretty much up until the 80s where people started to play video games, but it was still a lot of meeting in person type thing. But once the iPhone came out in 2007, it became a phone-based childhood.
Yeah.
Because of this, the Gen Z are off the charts with anxiety and depression and other issues.
That's really sad, isn't it?
Well, this is my thing. The Gen Z is aware of this. It's not like they're not aware. And I believe that they are going to seek more analog experiences in life. And they're going to
rebel.
Well, yeah, look, either they make, well, because I don't know if our government will ever make a change. There's just too much money in it, right, to make regulations on the internet and how it's being used with children. But for the...
Well, I mean, look at the food industry. It's a disaster.
Yeah.
It's a totally different topic, which is why so many kids are unhealthy and overweight and, you know, but that's a whole other problem.
But they are in a place now where they have to either make a change for the better or the future of our country and all English. This isn't just North America. This is all English-speaking countries have this issue. And it all begins around 2012.
I didn't know that there was like a date attached to that.
Well, I'm putting that specific date, but it's definitely the 2010s, and 2012 is pretty much when Instagram, Facebook, and all these social media apps, Snapchat, all of those apps are, you can pinpoint those apps to when the rates of girls committing suicide, preteen girls, like the numbers are crazy. Now, as I know that the numbers are not as crazy with adults, but it's there.
Well, this is interesting, very interesting. And I don't know the statistics on it at all, but you can kind of, if you look back and just in your own experience, how it's subtly taken over your life, it's kind of up to each individual to kind of decide how they're going to deal with that relationship. Which, you know, which is what I've done, and when I decided to quit Facebook, and believe me, it wasn't easy. It was like I felt like I was disconnecting. How, like in 2001, like sort of like, do I exist when I don't have this connection? There's an existential crisis that comes along with it in a little bit,
and
you really have to think about that. And I didn't grow up with it. I imagine that for these younger people that did. What kind of existential crisis are they experiencing if they're like canceled or bullied online, or
they compare themselves
to other people, that they can never escape it?
Yep. And so what I'm bringing up is that I think that you and I, coming from a place where we lived before this, and then when we lived in a pretty cool time of the internet, are able now to be like, it's not that way anymore. Right? It's not that way for creatives anymore. Because what happened is, and you know, we'll blame the algorithm, the Instagrams and the YouTubes and the Facebooks and all of these things that we were told are what we need for our creative arts to flourish in the online world and to monetize it, that has been changed to monetize the companies that like Instagram. So what they do now... It used to be I would post something and Regina would see it. I mean, I don't know if I see. I don't know if you're posting. I know you're not now, but like
I haven't been posting as much lately. But
yeah. I don't. YouTube's a little bit better than the others. But I will say follow somebody and I never see their stuff. Right? And it's because what algorithm does is it looks to see what gets the most engagement upon posting. And if it gets a lot, it pushes that to the top of the feed. And if it doesn't get much, it no longer shows it.
Yes, I noticed that, especially with Facebook in the last couple of years.
Facebook. And let's not talk about the issues with democracy and these places, because that's a whole nother thing. And it's destroying communities, period. We're so, you know, because of Facebook, there's so many problems in the world.
Well, I mean, it's an incredible tool for propaganda, and that's really what it turned into. And I watched a Netflix documentary last night, Antisocial Network, I think it's called. It's really interesting. It traces the origins of 4chan, and I was never involved in 4chan or anything.
Neither
like that,
was but, I.
How it became, it started out as a Japanese 2chan, and then someone hacked into the Japanese system and then recreated it in English. And like this teenage, you know, this high school kid, and then it became 4chan. And then it showed how it started out like nerdy kind of fun, and how it eventually just changed into this, it turned into Anonymous. Remember Anonymous, that group online, and Occupy Wall
QAnon.
Street and all this, and then QAnon. And then it kind of ends with the, attack on the Capitol.
Yeah.
And it shows how that just the through line of this thing with these kids who started out just being nerds and having fun changed into this really kind of terrible thing. And how some of the creators really pulled back from the original creators pulled back from that and like, I don't want to be part of this. But then it kind of took on a life of its own. And fueled a lot of these propaganda movements. And then of course even if you're doing, they were showing how it started out as trolling, you know, and funny memes, and maybe sometimes the trolling became cruel and that's not cool. And then things got racist and that's not cool. And sexist and that's not cool. It kind of, it touches on a lot of these different things, but someone is looking at this and saying, aha, this is an incredibly powerful tool that we need to implement for our own propaganda, whatever that is. And you really need to be aware of that. And I'm becoming more and more aware of that and pulling back and saying, wait a second, I don't have to follow this thread of this information that's just kind of put in front of me that really I wasn't interested in it at all. And now it's sort of captured my attention because it's dramatic and it's negative and it's hateful and it draws me in into the drama. And you really have to pull back from that and kind of think for yourself.
You need to understand that the people who are designing these platforms are hacking your brain. And there's a reason.
Exactly.
It's a reason it's called the attention economy. So what does Instagram want? And TikTok and YouTube, they want you to stay on their app, period. What's going to make you stay on the app is by putting things in front of you, not that you request it, but that they think you're going to be hooked, and then you're going to scroll to the next thing, scroll to the next thing, scroll to the next thing. You don't even watch. You're like, literally, you're scrolling, scrolling, scrolling. You might stop at something, but you're not seeing the content that you said, I want to follow.
Right.
You're not deciding
it. Someone else is deciding it for you based on the patterns that you establish.
Right. So then, if that's the case, as a creator, why am I posting things that people are not going to see? Right? It used to matter that you could post and the people who wanted to follow you would see your work. But that's not the case anymore. And so Instagram, if I post it, it's weird. Now, here is a good example. Like TikTok, I have over 200,000 followers on TikTok.
Wow.
And I post something and I get 200 views. How is that possible? How is that possible?
Oh, wow. Now, is 200,000 a lot on TikTok? Or is that like,
still a
that's a lot.
To me,
that is a lot on YouTube. It's huge.
Yeah, it would be amazing. I'd have one of those little things. It's different. Yeah, but TikTok changed. I've seen it change. So I started TikTok when COVID hit, and it was much easier and more organic. That was what everybody kept saying about it. It was organic growth, and you had conversations with the people. And then TikTok switched. This is another reason why I don't think social media is great, because you have no control over if they decide to change something that affects what you're doing, right? I had this growth, but then now they don't have, it's a different creator economy. I don't know. I mean, they used to have a creator fund. I don't even know how it works now, but it's really bizarre. it doesn't make any sense. I used to be able to post stuff and get views and comments and things, and now it's not happening. So they changed something. I don't have control over that.
That must be part of the business model, is to get people hooked and then, like Facebook did, and then slowly change things.
Yeah, because
and then it's not what it used to be, but it still looks like. Have you noticed Facebook has not changed the way it looks? That ugly blue.
Yeah.
I think that's by design. They certainly could change it.
But I don't think people are, as a creator, I don't think you're benefiting unless you got on. Again, with TikTok, I remember getting on and everybody laughing at me because I was on TikTok and being like, why are you on TikTok? It's for kids.
I didn't laugh at you, but no. Actually, I did go on TikTok. I had a Batilda channel and I just couldn't keep up with it. And I spent some time, I remember sitting on my couch in my studio, and I think I spent like an hour where I didn't move and I was just scrolling through TikTok, and I'm like, okay, this is dangerous for me. I got to stop.
Well, you know, average.
There's so many things I want to do. Like
Yes.
I have a huge house that needs attending to. I have a garden that's neglected. I don't need to be, which is much healthier for me to do. I don't need to be sitting there scrolling through TikTok or any other platform.
Well, one of the reasons I'm bringing this up is before all this stuff, as a writer, we suffer enough, right? Like,
we suffer so much.
We do not need social media to tell us, to compare us with others and to tell us we're imposters and all, you know, like, we don't need that. We already do that on our own. So
yes. This brings me to a dilemma that I have, is do I need social media to promote my books?
I don't think so.
Like how much, for example, I threw a back door, if you want to call it that. I've kept a Facebook account through for just my author account because I do run ads through Facebook. But when I've added up over the years, I've spent thousands of dollars on Facebook, on ads. I don't think I've gotten that money back in revenue.
Right.
It's probably just been and it's hard to face that because I've spent the money, but it's probably just, if anything, I've broken even. Like I do a lot of ads when I release a book, and people do tell me reviews. Oh, I saw this. Like I did that little reel of the evil clown.
Yep.
Like Carney came out, which got a lot of on Facebook and on Instagram. It starts on Facebook and then they play it on Instagram too. It got a lot of engagement, but did it get, was the engagement worth in sales what I paid for in the ad? I don't think so.
But I would argue that this isn't really what we're even talking about. So as a writer or a creator, you will need to promote your stuff in some way, right? So like
in some way,
paying
sure.
for advertisement is part of the job if you want to do that. But you don't have to go on and do the free uploading to TikTok and uploading. Like all that stuff is what, like if you create an ad and put it up, you're not on these devices. You're just, other people are going to see it. It has nothing to do with you.
Well, that's what I mean. Like I run it through my backdoor account, but I'm not engaging on Facebook.
Right.
So that there is difference, but I guess what else I'm saying, and you're a little better at this than me, going through Instagram and doing stories or TikTok and doing stories or engagements about books that will lead a pipeline into your own work that people can
right.
discover your work. I don't know how much engaged you are with book talk. I know it's a big deal. I know people have gotten, writers have gotten rich doing it, but to me that just feels like way too much for me to handle as somebody who would have to spend hours coming up with videos and reels and shorts to somehow bring that back to my books. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And I think I'm going to talk about how I think the pipeline can work. And if TikTok is your one thing you choose to be your pipeline, the beginning of your pipeline to get to somewhere else, fine, that might work. But what I'm saying is I think that you're not, it isn't really about TikTok working, it's that TikTok's working against you. They are not trying to help you get seen by the people who want to see it.
Oh, so you're saying it's not working. It's working against you because of the algorithm.
Yes.
And just that they're not sharing and forwarding. Okay.
Yes. It's if it worked the way it used to work, and that's when you say people who were on TikTok that were BookTok and they made it, I bet they started years ago on TikTok. Mm-hmm. I guarantee you someone starting a BookTok today will struggle to get a following. And even if they get some people, those people are not going to see their TikToks unless you actively look out and seek them out.
Yes, it's like that on Twitter. I mean, I have a Twitter account that I use to scroll through, but I don't engage on that account. But back in the day, I was trying. I mean, geez, even with Gemini Rising, you know, we were one of the first people on TikTok and, I mean, on Twitter. And, you know, maybe if I'd stuck that out, it would have paid off. But I didn't really want to engage with that platform. There's a whole group of horror writers that engage on Twitter. And they seem to spend a lot of time on their tweeting. And maybe they're buying each other's books. I just don't know if that's really helping. I think I've mentioned this before on one of our podcasts. I just don't know if that's really helping you find an audience. Or are you just kind of creating your own niche and community that maybe people are supporting each other? I don't know.
It'd be curious.
Has to be a different way.
Well, that's what we're going to talk about. But I think It'd be interesting to know how people find books and buy mm-hmm. them. I would guarantee you that most people go to a physical store or go online where they heard word of mouth, and that's why they're buying a book. I don't think many people probably, I'd say the only exception, and I haven't even purchased it yet, and no offense, Cameron Chaney, but that I think Autumn Hell is a book I want to read, and that is the only thing I think, or is it Autumn High or...
Yeah, Fresh Hell.
Fresh Hell, Autumn High, or Autumn Crow.
Autumn Crow High.
Yep. That's probably the only thing I can think of recently that I saw. And that's through this podcast and Bookworms and you that I discovered that more so than I would have never discovered Cameron Chaney if he hadn't been in Bookworms.
Oh, okay.
Right? How would I? It's only because you talked about him. He was in Bookworms, and then I looked into it, and that's a book I can get. But I mean, that's not organically me going on Instagram and have seen him. I would have never have seen him.
Interesting. Okay.
Right. I would have never have found that person.
And he has a relatively large channel.
Yeah, he has a good channel, and he does a lot of work on it, and you know, it seems to be working for him. But I'm saying I haven't organically discovered him, right? And I'm trying to think, who did I ever organically discover prior, like not from the way back when, yeah, maybe, but now stuff comes up that I'm like, I mean, literally the stuff that I get when I go through scrolling, and I don't think this is because of me, but it's like women who are either dancing in scantily clad clothes or women, there's this trend where they sit there for a second and then they do one frame of them like nearly naked sometimes.
Oh.
And it's, you know, like, you know, in Exorcist when Pazuzu pops up in that one flash.
Oh, okay. Like if you blink, you miss it.
Yes. So what this is they, it's called a pause challenge. So you got to try to pause it at the right time to see them naked.
Jeez.
Oh, and this is like a ton of, I'm like, who have we gotten to that place?
Yes, where obviously we have.
We have. But we've gotten to a place where young women and older women need the attention so badly that this is what they're resorting to.
Yes, and if you follow, if you're ever on Twitter and you follow like a thread, it always leads to, you know, nudes in my profile. You know, it always kind of comes back to that. I'm going to grab my dog for a second.
All right.
But yeah, that is
so.
That
what
is
am I?
True.
So I'm also saying, as a creator, you're not being seen, and the only way you will be seen is to find out what the trend is and do that trend, which is nothing about your creation.
Oh, that's true.
Right?
Yeah. I know people probably did this with deliberately, but people love drama. And I look, I admit it, I love it too. And I advise anyone never to insert themselves into someone else's drama, because I made that mistake once on YouTube, but I won't talk about that. It was many years ago. But, you know, the whole drama thing that happens and people getting into like online disputes and stuff, that draws people in. And then somehow that might get, now, I don't recommend this because I think it's a terrible thing to do, but if somehow you can be part of a drama, people, you'll get noticed. Now, what you do with that is up to you, but I guess getting noticed is what it's all about at first, but then you have to get them interested in your product. I mean, I actually discover books. I don't know. I guess this would be organic. I'm not sure, but through watching BookTube, I watch BookTube and people will recommend books, and then if I'm interested, I'll check out that book. And also being part of the community on BookTube, people recommend different books and stuff.
Right, and that's again, we'll come to that at the end. The community is the major word, and I see now that I'm doing book YouTube videos. Mm-hmm. I do see a community, and
yes, and we have a great community. Really do.
And so I'm excited about that. And
sometimes that community crosses the line into real life, which is awesome.
We'll get to that.
That's also part. Okay, we'll get to that. I didn't know what the talking points were.
Well, it's not really talking points, but it's just like, what are the problems facing a creator on social media, and how can we get what we want from these things? Because we're not getting what we want now. We are not getting the eyeballs on our art. And if you're telling me that I need to flash myself being naked for one frame in order.
Are you up for that challenge?
Yeah. That's the extreme version of what we're talking about is like, oh, I'm going to insert myself into drama so people then follow me. But then why did they follow you? They didn't follow you because of your art, right? Unless your body's art. But they followed you for something completely different. And then they'll unfollow you when you realize, oh, you just want me to buy your art. Or you want me to buy your book? Like,
who wants to buy your book? I want to hear more drama.
Yes. And so,
well, also, I think it's a mistake to, like, on Facebook. And one reason I got off of it, because I was only on there really to promote my books, which I'll continue to do. But trying to promote horror books to your relatives or old high school friends is not the best idea. So,
right. That's the only reason I use Facebook. For just family and friends, and I rarely go. My mom uses it, and that's the only way she knows how to communicate online.
Right, and I don't really communicate with any family members like that. My mom blissfully is not aware of the internet, because she's going to be 99 in a couple weeks.
Yeah, my mom's funny because she'll make a comment, but she always like signs the comment "Love, Mom."
That's funny.
Yeah, and it's like you don't have to. I can see it's from you. You know.
I also think, and I was talking to a friend of mine that I know in real life, how sometimes those friendships were meant to fade into oblivion.
So glad you brought that up.
Because you don't need to be friends with friends on Facebook and of course you can add them or not, but there is that kind of weirdness of, oh, well, like, am I rude if I don't add this person who's friending me that I knew 40 years ago and never really liked them anyway, you know, like this kind of thing. And then just even people that you have had close relationships with, those, some of them do fade, and they fade for a good reason usually. And I don't think they should be forced. In other words, like, maybe I don't want everyone to know what I'm doing, or I don't really want to know what everyone is doing. It's nice to just do the slow fade sometimes. You know what I'm saying? I'm trying not to be rude to anyone, because I'm sure people, you know, I know people have done the slow fade with me too, and it's fine.
Right.
I was at a funeral for a very good friend of mine on Saturday. It was very moving. I won't talk about it too much, but because I was friends with her since high school, I saw some old friends, people I knew in high school. So it was kind of weird because we're all so much older. I still recognize some of them. And I saw this one gal, and she's very nice. And I was thinking she and I were like for like maybe 1 year, the first year of high school before we kind of drifted into different friend groups. We were really close and I spent time at her house and I knew a lot about her family. And I saw her. It was nice talking to her. But I was thinking, God, for a very short time, we were really close friends. And now I have not seen her for all these years. And it was nice to see her again. But you know what I mean? I don't have to stay in touch with her and vice versa.
Right. And so
on Facebook.
Let me.
And so it's just kind of like I just became aware of that, that life is not about staying in touch with all these people.
And there's science to prove this, and it's not supposed to be that way. So the idea that you're supposed to have all these followers and things like that. So I'm going to give you the science. According to the theory of Dunbar's number, humans can only maintain about 150 connections at once, including an inner circle of five close friends and larger concentric circles of more casual friends. That's how we are supposed to interact as humans, and our species does that. We can't maintain these thousands of followers, right?
Right.
So you can't pretend that I'm developing all these friends online. It's not possible. It's just not something we as humans can do, right? So at some point, you got to say, I got my close friends. I got acquaintances a little bit outside of that. And then my customers, right? That's right. Different, right? And the idea that you need to maintain this online community where you have thousands of followers or something like that, you can't. It just can't be done. So there's no need for that. But I think,
and it's disingenuous to think that you have to have these, to call them friends, because they're not really friends. A friend is something rare and valuable. And most of us don't have, I mean, I consider you a friend, but right. I know you in real life, and we don't just do podcasts together and we have a history. But I don't have tons of real friends. I know a lot of people, I guess, but I wouldn't call them all friends, you know?
Right. So I want to get to the next part of this, but to begin with, it used to be cool. It's not cool anymore.
No.
And if you're a creator and you're trying to use social media to get your work out there, I don't think it's working anymore because it's designed to work for Instagram and Facebook to keep people on the platform, not necessarily having them see what they signed up for. So they signed up to see your art or to see your books and your postings. They're not seeing them. And the side effect of all this is anxiety. It's depression. It's loneliness. All these things are scientifically now we have the data to prove that being on these apps, and by the way, the average is 4 to 5 hours a day on these apps.
Yep. That's a lot.
You are not, first of all, those 4 or 5 hours, you're not doing your creative work. Which
I know. I was thinking about what time I've gained during that my 40 days of Lent. I did have a lot. I know I walked so much more. That was also part of my program. But, and I listen to podcasts when I walk. I'm not saying I'm not plugged in all the time anyway, but I'm not scrolling.
I don't believe.
I'm walking and listening to something that interests me or an audiobook or something.
I don't put podcasting into this group because podcasting is no different than when I was listening to the radio in 1985, you know?
True.
It could be talk radio. And that's how I view it. So
that's a good way of looking at it.
Well, you have,
but I've gained so much from not being on Facebook. I recommend it to anyone.
Right. And I think I'm recommending it as well, because I think the next stage is to build a community that you have control over how that community sees what you're doing. Mm-hmm. And for my example, I'm going to use Substack. Now, Substack is a free...
I like Substack.
Right. And it's growing and has... This podcast is done through Substack. Right. So, but... What I'm saying is that if you go to my Substack and you subscribe, you volunteered to get something from me in your inbox. I know you are seeing it. At least if, you know, it's going to your inbox. I know it's going to your mail. I keep that email list. That's my email list. I have control over that. Even if I leave Substack tomorrow, I can keep all those lists. That's mine. And that's the thing you won't get if Facebook decides, hey, we're closing down or we switch something up. You know, you can't have no guarantee that the people who signed in are seeing what you're posting with these social media platforms. And I'm not just saying Substack, Patreon's another one that you can do the same thing, right?
Right.
But the idea is to get these people into some community that you have control over. And they voluntarily sign in. Now, on Substack and Patreon, you can do it as a paid subscription as well. And, you know, what you provide depends whether they're going to pay is up to what you're providing them. But you're building an online community that they can comment, they can do these things, but it's not something where they're going to get lost by something else, right?
Right, right. And distracted by the, what do you call it? The pause, the naked pause.
The naked pause.
The
pause game.
The pause game. But the thing about that is it's allowing yourself to not be manipulated, which these platforms do so well and draw us into these silly, whatever. I don't know. They're stealing your, and I rewatched The Matrix the other night, the original film, which is very good.
So good.
It's such a great film. And I'm going to watch the other two.
It's good because it's a good movie on its own, but then the subtext and the like sort of religious undertones, it's so good.
Yeah, it's great. And I was thinking about that. I know there's people who speak much more eloquently about this than I'm going to try to, but we are in the Matrix. That film was so prophetic. Like, maybe we're not in actual pods hooked up to these tubes and we're fueling this electrical grid or whatever, but we are, in a way. Our attention is the fuel.
Yeah,
and
it
the
is.
Electrical
yes.
grid. And those Facebook, if all the billion users just decided, I'm not doing this, it would die. And wouldn't that be cool? Wouldn't that be cool if people just revolted and said no?
What's that? I'm mad as hell, and I'm not going to take it anymore. You know what's funny? We're talking
about
this.
The new Planet of the Apes movies when no,
yeah.
You know.
While we're talking about this, I got an email that says TikTok has sent you $8.96.
Oh,
I don't know how. I got to now look into this. Why did I get $8?
That's coffee money, I guess.
I guess so. But again, here's the thing. I rarely post on TikTok, or I rarely go on it, and I made $8. I don't know how, I have content on there that people might look at, but I don't need to be doing anything.
They're luring you back in with a little.
They are. Maybe that's it. But to me, that's not enough money to make me spend the amount of hours.
You're not going to sell your soul for $8 and change.
Yeah, I spent tons of time in the COVID years making videos, literally daily videos, multiple times.
You had some viral ones too.
Yeah, I have some videos that are over a million views. Doesn't matter though. Point is, I'm not saying don't use TikTok, don't use Instagram. I'm saying pick, because look, I have, and this is my new structure, I have Substack. But how are people going to know about my Substack? Well, this podcast, right?
Right. Or YouTube.
Those are my two pipeline things. I'm picking. So like, pick something that you will commit to working on. And I'm not talking about like, figure, the problem is with the Instagram is no one's going to see it unless you ever see those ones like, hey, put this song underneath and you'll get a million views, right? Or don't put any hashtags. It's the trick that you need to do. All this is bullshit. And
I've always been bad with the hashtags. You know, I still have Instagram because I communicate with some groups through Instagram messaging. And we kind of established that, and it's just easier than doing like Discord. I have a Discord, but I don't really.
But Discord's another one that can work as a community, right?
Sure.
It's a younger kids game. I don't know Discord that well, but like all the younger people I work with, they know it like the back of their hand. Mm-hmm. But if you do know Discord, that's another way to create a community that you have control over, that people opt in to see your work or read your work. And discuss your work or things you have in common. What we're talking about is a community. How do we make it? So there's somebody who says that, I'm not going to pretend I came up with this, but put the social back in social networking. Mm-hmm. And it's not there anymore. And
right.
I think it's a waste of your time.
It used to be great. Like I loved MySpace. That was like when we did Gemini Rising, we did so much through MySpace and it was exciting and it was fun. And it was like, you know, you could find out local bands, you could go there and like, oh, they're playing. Now you can still do that with Facebook, but it's just not quite as easy to navigate for, because of the junk that's being put in front of you. And we still need some kind of, even if it's through messaging, we still need some on or email. There's got to be some online component to let people know, hey, we're doing the gig on Friday here and it's 7 o'clock and blah, blah, you know.
Right.
You need to have that kind of way to communicate. So, and they'll say, you know, just be a complete purist, but choose wisely which platforms you use and don't get sucked into the ones that are just going to waste your time as a creator, because that, going back to like creators, that will not help you to write your novel or to make your painting or whatever it is that you're doing at all, because it's just going to suck. Like then you are in the matrix and your energy is being sucked away from you and you don't even know it. So you really have to be careful. I saw another video and I didn't have time to watch it before we were doing this podcast, but it came up because I was Googling about this subject, and it was about how creators or artists have a hard time with social media because they are opinionated and they usually think outside the box because they're artists and they're creative. And then they say things that make people angry or people don't get. Like Lana Del Rey, who I think she's wonderful. She had to quit because she said something that, you know, she got not canceled, but people got upset. And I was just on Twitter the other day and Sean Lennon, who is a very cool guy and he's an artist, people started calling him far right because he said something about maybe we should just have peace or give peace a chance. And his response was great. And some idiot wrote in the comments, because it was all about the whole Israel
right
situation, which I don't want to go into, but you know, a lot of strong opinions about that topic. And someone wrote, well, how would you feel if someone came into your house and killed your family? And he's like, well, I don't have to imagine that actually happened to my family. My father was murdered outside my building.
Yeah.
And it's like, there was just like kind of silence after that. Like, oh, whoops.
But you know, you brought up Twitter. I don't use Twitter at all. Mm-hmm. And just for all the people who are going to yell at us, it's also, we Uh-oh. Know it's called X.
But, oh, I know, but I still call it Twitter.
And nobody, it's so funny, it came up at work yesterday and it's like, nobody called, everybody follows up with, you know, X, but nobody calls it X. They just call it Twitter still. But I don't use it and I don't feel like I am missing out.
No, you're not.
I don't feel like I would gain anything by using it. And that's how I started to feel about Instagram. Now, mm-hmm. I decided, and here's how I'm going to control it. I decided it's not that I'm not going to post on Instagram because we have the Bookworms horror zine. What I did is I took it off my iPhone. So I have no temptation to just scroll for no reason.
My desktop.
Yep, exactly. If I need to post that we have a new Bookworms horror zine available in May, I will go on my desktop, I will create the art, and I will put it on there. And then I walk away.
But can you add photos on your desktop?
Yeah.
You have to show me how to do that because
it's the same process. You just got to look for the little plus. It's on the left-hand side. It'll say post. But that's why I removed it from my phone.
I just, you know what? Whenever I start to feel this anxiety about this new world, I go back to the way I was raised and I go out into nature. I touch grass, as they say.
You remind me of Charlotte and Charlotte's Web.
Yes, I love
that.
My favorite
seems like
growing
yeah,
up.
It seems like that was your childhood with Wilbur.
It was, or Little House on the Prairie.
Oh yeah, it's my wife's favorite.
Saying that maybe the new generation of kids will rebel, like the like a new kind of back to nature movement, which would be cool.
I believe that. I believe, and here's the final thing I want to say, is I believe we're going to have a return to analog, a return to meeting in person, a return to community, because look, these Gen Zers are growing up realizing the damage that these social media apps have done to them. They're going to have families, and I doubt they're going to want to be like, hey, do what I did because that worked out well. Now, those kids might rebel, and you know, but I think it's very important. So I think you need to limit your time, obviously, with these apps. Think of it as, if you're a writer, don't think about it to as a somebody who's consuming it. Think of it as a tool you will use to get somebody to come to the community you've set up. And then once you have that community, perhaps make some events where you meet in person.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
And I think, I'm hoping someday, like Bookworms, we can do something like that, like a Bookworms convention, you know, something where people can meet up in person and discuss that.
I thought of I always come up with these ideas. I thought it would be great to have a horror tube convention.
Yeah, that would be amazing.
Like a horror tube con. It really would be amazing because I think we have enough people.
Well, you and I can discuss.
Yeah, we'll just discuss that. I have some ideas.
That's what I'm talking about. So let's talk about YouTube. Now, I don't see a lot. I do see, since I started on like a BookTube community, I see my numbers going up as far as people subscribing versus what I used to do. I like that. But I feel also part of a community with the old school April thing happening. People saying, welcome to old school April and commenting. And that's great because that helps me get people to my community where I hope they go. But the point is that my community on the Substack, if you go and you it's in the show notes, you join that community, it's free. And then my goal then would be, like we just talked about, of maybe developing some kind of in-person events.
Right.
That
I think that's great.
Yeah. And I think that's the goal of as a creator. And I was just thinking about this. The fine artists who are painting stuff and just throwing it up on, that's not a way to experience that art. So
no.
Here's a good example of what I'm talking about. Years ago, I was really, really, really into analog photography. And I taught myself everything from getting the 35mm camera, getting the film, taking the pictures, and then
I remember. Yep. You had a black room and everything, didn't you?
Dark room. And I developed the negatives in my bathroom. I took the negatives down to the basement and had my little dark room. And I started getting into that. And I'll tell you, I've shot digital, and there is nothing better than the experience of having your film and then putting it on the enlarger and taking that, watching it come to life in the liquid.
Mm.
That was amazing.
I never learned how to do that. Joe, my husband Joe, did, when he studied art, he did darkroom photography. I always love those scenes in movies.
Yes.
Like in The Omen, when he's developing the pictures and in the red light.
Yep.
There's something very dramatic about it.
Yep.
But do you think that part of why there is nothing that compares to that is the slowing down nature of
the process.
I think that we're moving too fast with these, like TikTok, I think would be a perfect example of really, like when I sat there and scrolled, I was just like in like speed. I was like speeded up. But the slowing down process, like the slowing down process of writing, I think is also really important. I wrote this morning and I just gave myself an hour because that's all the time I had, but I really used that hour and I did like a chapter edit and I set a goal. I'm just going to spend 1 hour just really focusing on this chapter and doing, I think they call it like deep work or deep focus.
Yes.
That is very important to any art form, whatever it is that you're doing. And the internet does not help with that.
Right. And I think
listening to certain types of music or something.
In the writing world, I think the slowing down would be writing with pen and paper. Because,
true.
I mean, you can do
that
it on
really
a computer.
Slow it down.
But I know Neil Gaiman eventually said, like, I go and I write my first drafts on paper because I can't just go, let me check my email, let me do this. And I heard another person talking about this, how it's not a first draft. It's draft zero, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's where you're just dumping that out. And so I think I'm going to try, I'm trying to write a short story of it in my head. I'm going to try writing the draft zero on paper. Because to me, that's the slowing down when it comes to this. And
when I write poetry, I always start with longhand.
Yeah. I'm going to try that because I think it will help me not be distracted. But to compare the digital experience when you're talking about slowing down. Now, on a digital camera, you can still put it in manual mode and have to slow down to figure out what the settings are. But you can literally take the picture and say, let me fix that. Take the picture. Let me fix that. They're, like, mm-hmm. when you have to know when you're taking a film photo that your exposure is good, because you don't get to check it and fix it. You have to wait till you see it developed whether it was good.
Right.
But I think the other thing is, once you have a digital photo, you bring it onto the computer and then you use something like Lightroom and you drag sliders. There's no tactile experience there. There's nothing different from me scrolling on Instagram, really, versus using Lightroom. It's the same thing. You're on a computer and you're dragging things. But it's a tactile, physical, touching experience when you are taking a negative and putting it on this machine and turning light, and then you got to dodge and burn with shadows. So you have all these physical things you're doing. And I have the photo I took of my son. He's a big Beatles fan. So I did the John Lennon photo where he's standing in New York with his arms mm-hmm. crossed.
Okay.
And I don't know if it's rock and roll. I don't know what.
Oh, maybe, no, is it the
he's
New
wearing
York
I Love New York. Yeah, he's got the skyline in the background. Well, I did it with Philly. And I had Noah standing, and the Delaware River is behind. We shot it in Camden, but the Delaware River is behind him, and behind that is Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
And it's on my wall. It's one of my favorite photos because that one I made from beginning to end, all handmade. You know, there's no touching of it at all. And like I said, there's no better experience when it comes to photography. And I think these are things that we talked about with vinyl records, why kids are going back to that. I think...
Well, just to interject, I believe there is a... And maybe you can go do this with Leo. Is I think there's a... At the Philadelphia Museum of Art right now, a good photography show, black and white photography show.
No.
Well, I saw that online.
The reason why I brought this up is because when I was in that moment, I was following some other analog photographers, and there's this woman from Europe. I forget where she was, Germany or something like that. And she was doing like really great work, and she would have little tutorials and things. Now, why did I follow her? Because she was teaching, so I was learning from that, right? It wasn't just buy my stuff. But she had a show in New York City. I never thought I'd get to see this person in person and see her work in person.
Mm-hmm.
So I went up to, it was in the Village. I went up, she had a show. I got to meet her and talk to her and see her art in person and talk to her in person. That's what I think creators need to do, is say, hey, here I am. Provide something of value for somebody, or otherwise they're not going to want to follow you. Have something like it, for YouTube, I'm giving you my opinion on books. That's something of value. You might find, like you said, somebody recommended a book to me on BookTok or BookTube. I'm now going to get that book. That's providing a value for that person, you know?
Uh-huh.
Then they like that value and they keep following you. And then you make that relationship enough where you're the creator, you finally get them to subscribe to whatever community you've built that you have control over. And then you can send out an email saying, I'm going to be here. And... Uh-huh. Let's get together.
Yeah, we should definitely think about doing like a bookworm zine. We talked about the local bookstore in my town.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll pull that together.
But that's what I think, why I think social media is dying, why I think the next step is online communities that merge into physical in-person events. And that's going...
It's taking the control back. Versus being manipulated
and
by these platforms.
Right. And it's better to have 1,000 true fans than 200,000 fake fans.
True.
And that's what I think the goal is. 1,000 is definitely... Now, I didn't say these are true friends.
No, but they're
right. Fans. 1,000 people who... And you know, Regina, you know you have some of those people already. Right. I do. I have people who just comment on everything or buy something and they are great and I love them. And just because That's not a rarity. There's 8 billion people in the world. All you need is 1,000 of those type of people. And they give you, if they give you $100 a year, that's $100,000 you make each year.
That's a good way of looking at it.
Yep. But you won't get that unless you're building that community, being authentic, and
giving back.
Yeah, that's what I said. Giving. That's what I said. You have to start with a value. You have to start by giving value.
And being supportive of other creators, and that's also really important.
Yeah, but I think I don't see any value, and that's my whole point of this, is I don't see any value in these social media networks anymore. And hey, I don't have a huge newsletter following yet, and that's okay. Like, it's not about the numbers either. It's about me consolidating everything. I don't want to have to go post on Instagram, post on Facebook, post on TikTok, LinkedIn, and which I don't use either, Twitter. Yeah, like, I don't, that's ridiculous. I want to say, hey, I like making YouTube videos. I've been doing it since it started in whatever, 2000. I like YouTube videos. I like making them. I have fun coming up with ideas. So why would I take that out of my life if I enjoy it? If I didn't enjoy doing it, I would not be doing it. But I enjoy YouTube. And
but you don't have to do all the other stuff too.
Right. If like let's
pick one or two.
So mine, I mean, I don't, like I said, the only reason I have TikTok and I don't use it, but I'm trying to see how it works, because I can go on YouTube and post something and I just repost that same thing on TikTok to see, compare them. Only because if I didn't have the 200,000 people on there, I wouldn't care. But I want to see, like, well, maybe.
So if you do a short on TikTok, it gets a lot more views than.
Well, I've been putting 10-minute videos up on TikTok. So I'm like, who cares?
I didn't know you could.
You can now, yeah.
Okay.
And the cool thing is, if I upload the YouTube video, when you go to TikTok and I do it like full screen, not vertical, it'll say, watch full screen. And then it looks just like it does on TikTok. I mean, on YouTube.
Oh, wow.
So it's not a vertical video. It's a regular video. And I don't know if that works. I don't care. I don't want to be led by trends. I don't want to be led by what the algorithm thinks I need to do. Yeah. I want to create what I want to create, and the genuine 1,000 fans will find you. Stop following the algorithm. It's not going to work.
Yeah.
Right. Unless you're getting naked. Like, if you want to do that, more power to you. But that's what's been taken over. I literally have gone on TikTok or Instagram, even Facebook, because it's the same, but Facebook has shorts. They're the same content. It's either, I either see stand-up comedians, women getting naked. And I don't know. Like, to me, I don't know why this is the stuff I get. You know, there's that politics stuff that comes up.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, none of it is anything I want. It's like they're saying, hey.
So it doesn't matter, like, if you just watch, let's say you just watch Book Talk, are they still going to send you the naked girls?
Probably. Maybe I stop a little too long.
Because you have to put your sex and your age in. They're like, oh,
he's a middle-aged man. He wants to watch naked women. And I'm not against that. I'm just saying that as the creator, as a viewer, this is what they're throwing at me. But I did not check these people. I don't follow those people, right? Yeah. I'm seeing stuff I don't follow.
Yeah, the same thing happened to me on Facebook. These were not my quote unquote friends, and I was seeing these posts.
Right. And so I think the game is up. Social media is
up.
Yep. They're going to have to change their thing, and I don't think they will. I mean, they're winning. There's no reason they need to change what they're doing. And
but we need to unplug, and they would just completely.
Well, look.
Collapse.
I don't know if society is going to follow suit, right? But one thing with you, Regina, is you're ahead of the trends, right? When you brought me over to your house, when you brought me over your house to watch The Room, that was probably how many, like 10, 15 years before that social, whatever, The Room became big with the movie. Like, that was so ahead.
Well, the reason that was, I wasn't the first, that there were actually like a small group in LA that had the same response.
I'm not saying you're the first only person.
I do believe I brought it to
the East
Philadelphia
Coast
area.
Yeah, I believe that
because
too.
Because I was out in LA visiting my sister and I saw the infamous billboard and I was just as intrigued as those other people. And then I looked it up and I found some articles on the internet. And then I was able to, and it was about those people who were doing the initial viewings. And then someone had like the link for the DVD directly from a Johnny Rousseau. And I bought it and showed it in my living room. And then it kind of took off.
Yeah. And then I got Tommy Wiseau on my show.
I know.
And and had an interview with him.
And then it became a movie with James Franco. And
yes,
and
which was decades later, so much longer after that. But I'm saying, I think the society probably won't be on board with us. But with AI and with the new technology, I think things are going to get worse if people don't figure out how to get offline. But
I think it's fine. I don't mean to interrupt, but it's fine if you're just like, I don't like to use the word normie. But if you just enjoy it, do it. But if you're an artist, or creator, writer, which I think most of our audience on this podcast would be, rethink your relationship with social media.
Right. And I also believe that you and I feel the same way about getting more analog with art and as a creator and going
and
out.
Slowing down,
going to real events with real people and showing your art in the real world. If you and I feel that way, there's a lot of other people that will feel this way. And if our community is just, 20,000 people who want to go back to the analog art and communities and build those real relationships with the people who like our art and other artists, that means... you don't need 8 billion people to agree with you here. We only need a little bit of people that want that experience with these creators. People who are like, first of all, the thing great about writing fiction is the majority of people, I would say all readers, are people who want to be, in an analog world. They may read it on a Kindle, but overall, I think they are people who like
books.
And then like
the aesthetic of a book.
Yeah. And I think that because of that, if you're a writer, they would be very happy to meet you in person or to get to know you more. Do I care that we'll say Joe Hill? Sure. He's on Facebook or he's on Instagram. And I had said something on one of his things and he had a response to me about, it was a Jaws thing. And that was funny, but it was not like going up to Brooklyn and hearing him talk in person and then getting him to sign something and talking him about Nosferatu and stuff like that. That's a real experience that I would cherish more than I follow him on Instagram. Who cares?
Well, we have a friend named Ken Weaver. I don't know if you remember him.
I know. He's the artist in New York.
Yeah, he's the artist in New York. He started with maybe a couple other people, a gallery in New York, very tiny room. I don't know how many people can fit into that room. Like maybe 40 people can cram in. It's very small, but he's been doing these great shows and going there. I saw his opening, the energy that's in that room with so many people crammed in and the fun vibe is just, you can't even compare it to just going on, like seeing his artwork or anyone's work on
Instagram.
Your phone. Yeah. It's just not the same.
So we're running out.
I really encourage people to actually have a real experience.
Yeah. And we're running out of time. We have a minute. So I want to just wrap this up, but I will say with the Ken Weaver thing, are you more willing to probably buy art from somebody you were just in a great experience in a real life space versus buying art that you saw someone post on Instagram? You're going to want to have the one that you had the relationship with. So we're out of time. We will be back next week. Hopefully, unless I end up in a hospital, knock on wood.
No.
I'll be all right. But
I just knocked on my desk.
So did I. So, all right. We'll see you then.
Okay. Good talk.
All right. Bye.